Well, it's always a pleasure to have with us the one and only John Clayton from ESPN. John, how you doing?
I'm doing great, Vic. How are you?
I'm doing extremely well, and I'm even better now that you're with us. John, let's start with the negotiations that failed or have broken off, at least for the time being, between the NFL and the officials. How do you see this being handled by the league?
Well, I mean, I look at it no different than what we just witnessed with the lockout, that, you know, it's never over till it's over, or it actually is never over until something starts. And, of course, the first game is going to be the Hall of Fame game, and so something has to be resolved before then. But until that time, I mean, it's a matter of hard leverage on each side. And the only thing that the officials can do is just not sign an agreement, and the only thing the NFL can do is try to play hardball and then try to at least hire replacements. I mean, in the end, I think they'll get a deal done. I can't imagine I'm not getting a deal done. You can understand that there's going to be some adjustments because, you know, in a lot of ways, because this is a referees union, and technically these are part-time people that are working. You know, there's going to be the adjustment made to their pension system, which is a little bit right now richer than some of the ones in the front offices, and that's going to be something that's going to, you know, not go over well in some of the major adjustments. But in the end, I think they'll get a deal done. I mean, first off, it would be an absolute disaster for a league that preaches safety to go with less qualified officials. And I'm not criticizing the replacements who couldn't come in there,
right.
But when you start to talk about the idea that you can't go to the BCS schools, you're now basically, you know, going in almost the lowest level to try to get guys, how can you expect to have safety type of officials coming into a league that plays so fast? So in the end, they'll get something done, but all this is just a battle of leverage.
John, the latest in the bounty scandal is that a judge denied the appeal for the players who've been suspended. What does that mean, and how much, you know, are there more shoes to drop in that case?
Oh, there's plenty of more shoes to drop, but this was the easiest one to see which way it was going to go. And you know it was going to go in the NFL's because this was a jurisdictional battle where what they were doing is going to the system master, Stephen Burbank, and saying, okay, if players then put money into a pool and that's the accusation, this should be litigated in a salary cap dispute and shouldn't be done as a player conduct. Well, I mean, the conduct is what is being tested here, and Roger Goodell, rightfully from his standpoint, is saying, okay, it's not a matter of salary cap, it's a matter of performance, and you're trying to danger the safety of players on the other teams, and so because of that, I have jurisdiction, and that's what Stephen Burbank easily upheld. I mean, this was kind of a Hail Mary, but it's a Hail Mary that the union had to try to do just from the standpoint that they have to test the case and see where it's going to go and see if they can at least get some positive ruling. The bigger one now is going to be, you know, is there an amnesty provision from anything before 2011 when they signed the CBA? You know, that's going to be the big one. And then also, too, when the NFL starts presenting its evidence to try to back up these allegations to the players. At this point, they really haven't done much. Some of it can be maybe blamed on the players from the standpoint that, you know, they've not cooperated, and so because of that, they haven't had a meeting of the mind yet to be able to present those that type of information. That now has to be done by some kind of arbitration system. But, you know, this is the first shoe, but this was the easiest shoe to try to figure out.
John, before the draft, there was a lot of talk that when the Browns were holding the fourth overall pick, that they should use it on Justin Blackmon, that they should get the most dynamic receiver in the draft. And when the draft was over, a lot of disappointment expressed by Browns followers and some criticism from media that they didn't sufficiently address the receiver position. Now, you bring this up obviously because he's made news in the wrong kind of way. Justin Blackmon, of course, taken by the Jaguars, but, you know, getting arrested in Oklahoma for aggravated DUI, and then having, you know, that just that whole specter of he doesn't have a contract done with the Jaguars, and he could be suspended because of this. So not that this means this is the reason the Browns shouldn't have drafted him, because all could still work out for a great career with him, and maybe this will be the only incident. But you just begin to wonder if something like this is what maybe teams that did not draft him, and I'm not suggesting this was the case with the Browns, but, you know, maybe this was something that was a concern.
Well, I'm sure the character is a very important part of this, and I don't know if the Browns did have any character issues, but I think you have to be alarmed at the number that he put up. When you're talking about a .24, three times the legal limit, particularly for somebody that's had a DUI back in 2010, you know, the judgment certainly isn't there. I mean, okay, fine, you're young, you're having a good time and all that stuff. But to be able to be in a car like that with a .24, I mean, that's bad judgment. And, of course, you know, if you have bad judgment off the field, it's going to affect what teams are going to think of you on the field. You know, the thought that I had just from the Browns standpoint is that, and this is nothing, I throw the character issue aside, you should always, when you have the opportunity and you have the needs, take the best player available. Certainly in a salary cap area, you have to tailor things to needs, but this team needed a running back and it needed a wide receiver. And I thought going into the draft, I think probably like the Browns did, that of the play of the position player that fit the needs, you know, Richardson was better. Because, and this is not a criticism of the character of Blackmon, I kind of looked at Blackmon as kind of being an upgraded version of Michael Crabtree. He's not as talented. He's not as good as I think Julio Jones is. I don't think you can put him in the A.J. Green category. And so when you start to, you know, look at the two receivers who were drafted high last year, those guys are going to be among the best wide receivers in their conferences for a long period of time, just like Trent Richardson's going to be. I think Blackmon can be a very good wide receiver, but I wouldn't put him in the same category. So I think, you know, in retrospect, this may at least ease the minds of some Browns fans that maybe it wasn't the right decision. But I think you can see that Richardson, I think, is going to be better at his position than Blackmon, and that's even throwing that character issue aside for Blackmon.
We're visiting with John Clayton from ESPN here on Cleveland Browns Daily, driven by Liberty Ford. So contract negotiations, because he doesn't have his deal done, and in general, John, we're into early June. Obviously, no reason to panic for deals that aren't done, but what's your overall sense of how rookie deals are being put together? And beyond that, any other negotiations that should be on the radar? Are teams basically going to shut things down here fairly soon from a business standpoint?
Well, first off, it's the best I've ever seen it, and I guess you can see it's a successful strategy that's being worked out right now with the new rookie pool. I mean, the fact that here we are just beginning June, and there's only about 66 unsigned draft choices. To me, I find that incredible. And you can see that, you know, two-thirds of the first round are being done, and sometimes they can be a little bit tricky, but you know, our old friend, the late George Young, used to talk about doing rookie contracts, and he would always say, wait till Bastille Day in July. Well, by the end of this month, most of the deals are going to be done. And I know that there's some arguments right now on some offset provisions for first-round picks, and that's why some of the top eight are being done. But I would imagine by the end of the week, Andrew Luck is going to get done. If you're wondering about the Justin Blackmon incident and how that's going to affect negotiations, I do not think it will affect his negotiation. In fact, it may put him in a more sympathetic position to try to get a deal done quickly because of the fact he made such a mistake. But I do think that these deals will get done. This system now, I think, is very similar to the NBA. Everything is slotted. You know, you and now, if you're a player, you know what you're going to make, and you can collect that money earlier, and players have done that. I mean, when you think that, you know, there are about 190 guys that are already done, I just find that remarkable.
John, when we look at the Browns situation at quarterback, it's one of multiple areas where people are going to be focused on, you and others on a national basis, looking at rookies who are coming into the league at the quarterback position, and some have the ready-made spot for them. Maybe all do, or most of them do. But how do you see it playing out with particularly this top four group of Andrew Luck and of RG3 and of Brandon Whedon and of Ryan Tannehill as far as their presence as starters in their rookie seasons?
Well, I mean, I think that Robert Griffin III is going to be the most successful early, not maybe necessarily this year, because, you know, there's so many elements that have to come together for the Redskins. I mean, is their offensive line going to be healthy and good enough? Do they have enough receiver threats? And actually, when you take a look at it, when you look at the four guys right now, there's questions as far as, you know, do they have enough talent to be as successful as early as, say, Cam Newton and maybe Andy Dalton? I think that's a big question mark right there. Ultimately, I think Andrew Luck is going to be the best of all the four quarterbacks. I think, you know, his ratings were as good as Peyton Manning, if not better. I think Robert Griffin III is going to be the first of the quarterbacks to make the playoffs, probably as soon as next year. I can see them really ramping things up. In the case of Wheaton, I mean, you know from what the organization wants. I mean, it's his job to lose, But at least he has a running back in Trent Richardson that can make things a little bit easier and try to have everything on his shoulders, that he would have to throw 35 to 38 passes a game. In the case of Ryan Tannehill, I just worry about that talent. I mean, when you think that they traded away Brandon Marshall for whatever reason, and they're left with Devin Best, who's a good slot receiver, and Brian Hartline, I mean, there's just not enough receivers to be successful. And what I worry about, and I think that's why they're going to go with Matt Moore at the start of the season, you know, if you don't have enough good receiver, you're going to repeat the mistakes that happened in Jacksonville with Blaine Gabbert. And so if that's going to be the case, wait till the receivers develop and then allow Matt Moore to start, and then wait for Tannehill maybe by week 8 or week 9.
Great stuff, Jenny. As always, we truly appreciate it, and we will catch up with you down the line.
Okay, sounds good.
The one and only John Clayton from ESPN joining us here on Cleveland Browns Daily, driven by Liberty Ford. You're listening to ESPN 850 WKNR.